following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Hey, we made it to a Friday. Welcome to it, everyone. I'm starting the show live because I need to reiterate something that I play at the beginning of every show. Here we go again.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Apparently, there's a collective outrage around the country because a new member of Congress used an expletive. Oh, my fucking God. All right, I got a little something I put together for you.
Well, it shows you kind of what's on the mind of Democrats right now. They're into name calling. We even had one of the congressmen yesterday call the president Hitler. Now she's using obscene language to describe this president. Listen, if they want to come to Washington and engage in this type of nasty, ridiculous, outrageous rhetoric.
This is Trump's spokesman.
Focusing on the issue at hand, because this type of rhetoric, while it may ratchet up a few folks on their side, it's not going to do anything to fix the real problems we face in this country.
Hey, Hogan Gidley, fuck you.
People love you, and you win. Woo. And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won, bullies don't win. And I said, baby, they don't, because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the motherfucker.
That's a bad word.
No bad words. Bad thoughts, bad intentions, and words. You know the seven, don't you, that you can't say on television? Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits, huh?
Ooh, he said motherfucker.
Those are the heavy seven. Those are the ones that'll infect your soul, curve your spine, and keep the country from winning the war.
Yeah.
Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. Wow.
You know what happened in the last Congress when Republicans were in the majority? You know what our freshman class did?
What?
They put a resolution together to actually work with one another, to not use foul language. And they got almost every single freshman to sign on to it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the difference with this new Congress, and it's wrong.
With all due respect, though, the president not too long ago referred to a woman as horse face. Who within your caucus called out the president for that type of language?
I think a lot of them did in that process.
The messenger is important. I could have one man say, we're going to tax you 25%. And I could say another, listen, you motherfuckers, we're going to tax you 25%.
None of the words belong on the list, but you can understand why some of them are there. I'm not completely insensitive to people's feelings. You know, I can dig why some of those words got on the list. Like cocksucker and motherfucker, those are heavyweight words, you know. Oh, there's a lot going on there, man.
You have them by the pussy?
Besides the literal translation and the emotional feeling, I mean, they're just busy words.
It's only words, and words are all I have to take your heart away.
There's a lot of syllables to contend with. And those K's, those are aggressive sounds, they jump out at you. Cocksucker, motherfucker, cocksucker.
It's like an assault on you, you know? So I can dig that.
Ah, the late, great George Carlin. When I heard all this outrage over a word, oh my God, the first thing I thought of was George Carlin's seven dirty words. They're fucking words, God damn it. And these holier-than-thou assholes get up there. Kevin McCarthy was the one who said this.
You know what happened in the last Congress when Republicans were in the majority?
What?
You know what our freshman class did?
What?
They put a resolution together to actually work with one another, to not use foul language.
Really?
And they got almost every single freshman to sign on to it.
Almost every single freshman. But what about the president of the fucking United States?
We'll beat the shit out of them. Let them beat the shit out of ISIS also.
They're ripping the shit out of the sea. We're going to knock the shit out of ISIS. Gonna knock the shit out of him.
Nice guy.
Whoever the hell brought this mic system, don't pay the son of a bitch to put it in, I'll tell you. You shouldn't pay the bastard.
But it's political bullshit.
She said he's a pussy.
And you can tell them to go themselves.
You're not gonna raise that fucking price, you understand?
Listen, you motherfuckers, we'll tax you 25%.
What kind of people do we have?
I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there, and she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony tits and everything. She's totally changed her look. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy.
Grab them by the pussy. The grab them by the pussy. Five words that this president is most known for. And they're complaining that a young, vibrant, awesome new member of Congress got exuberant at a move-on celebration the night the new Congress began. Where's the criticism of that vulgar piece of shit? Oh, see, they're saving their... Oh, hold on, my husband's calling. Hello? Why are you calling?
What could possibly be more obscene than a president that calls Klansmen fine people?
Yeah, that's a good question. Or, you know, he talks about, well, I've got, he's having this ridiculous, he's probably still rambling on in the Rose Garden with another insane stream of consciousness press conference, answering questions yet not really answering anything, making shit up as he goes along. I'm sorry, I find his lies a hell of a lot more offensive than somebody saying motherfucker.
Motherfuck him.
Okay, anything else?
I love you madly.
All right, love you too. Thanks, David. Bye. That was my husband, in case you were wondering. Of course, this only comes from the latest Republican freakout when Samantha Bee had the nerve to say this.
Ivanka Trump, who works at the White House, chose to post the second most oblivious tweet we've seen this week. You know, Ivanka, that's a beautiful photo of you and your child, but let me just say, one mother to another, do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless c-. He listens to you. Put on something tight and low cut and tell your father to f-ing stop it. Tell him it was an Obama thing and see how it goes, okay?
Okay. See, and she took so much flack for that. It's a word. As I tweeted out a few minutes ago, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, motherfuckers. This outrage is just unbelievable. But that wasn't the only outrage. There was something else Trump was all bent out of shape on. I don't know, because this word thing really got my gore. He can go on and be the most offensive creature on the planet. He can jail children. Immigrant families and young children, he can put them in cages. Their border control agents can kick them and abuse them and in some cases rape them. Children can die in their fucking custody and you're outraged by a curse word? Sorry, Jackson doesn't like it when I shout. He gets scared. I'm just, the whole thing is an outrage. And then the latest is, oh, did I not pull the clip over here? Shit. Hold on. Because just a few minutes ago, during this Rose Garden, oh, here it is. This Rose Garden so-called news conference that they're holding. You know, he goes in the press briefing room where they do presidents have in the past held news conferences, and he does this bullshit statement he didn't say anything yesterday, he didn't say anything today, but he doesn't take questions in the White House briefing room, but then he goes out and holds court in the Rose Garden today, again lying about everything. But so this, he was asked this question, this was a good one.
He also said, you said in the meeting, this is him quoting you, I just want to check, that the shutdown could go on for months or even a year or longer. Did you say that? And
I did.
Is that your...
I did.
Is that
border
your assessment
secure,
of where we are?
Year?
Absolutely, I said
a
that.
A year or
I don't
longer?
I think it will, but I am prepared, and I think I can speak for Republicans in the House and Republicans in the Senate. They feel very strongly about...
No, you can't speak
having
for
...having a safe
anyone.
Country, having a border that makes sense without borders. I've said it many times. We don't have a country. I hope it doesn't go on... even beyond a few more days.
Okay, shut up. I can't take him. I actually tried to sit down and watch some of this. I got the show all set up for today and was ready, and I made my daily peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch. I know, I'm a healthy eater. What can I say? And turned on the TV and saw this travesty taking place. So there's Dump in the Rose Garden surrounded by Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Kirstjen Nielsen, and who also, Mitch McConnell, of course, conspicuously absent. And he was just spewing out the lies. Now, I thank you, chat room, for reminding me what the other outrage was. They're outraged, I tell you, just outraged that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez danced in college. How dare she dance in college? She was dancing on a rooftop. She was doing some fun thing. It was just youthful, fun. She was a college student. She was at Boston University. And I give her all the credit in the world. I wish I was that carefree and fun-loving when I was in college. I was the same feisty bitch that I am today. Although I did know how to have a little bit of fun. Anyway, and they're bitching about the fact that she's dancing. These people have a serious problem. Yeah, dancing. How dare she? Unbelievable. All right, I'm just this vat of negativity, it seems, but not really. I got to tell you, I was outraged the other day at something I was reading. Oh, the coverage! It was the whole thing about the coverage. David Sirota's article that prompted all these publications to come out and slam Bernie Sanders. The New York Times has an attack story on Bernie Sanders today. And it's starting. The attacks on David Sirota, who I know can be a bit of an asshole at times. Frankly, so can I, but that's neither here nor there. David Sirota can be a real jerk. But the fact remains, he also does some really good work. And this article he did on Beto O'Rourke, I think, was necessary because he's been touted as like the second coming of the progressive gods. And if you examine his voting record, not really. So David Sirota wrote a fact-based, well-researched article that showed how at 176 times over his three-term career in the House of Representatives, Beto O'Rourke not only voted with Republicans, but voted to advance some of their really heinous legislation. I like Beto O'Rourke. I think he's got charisma. I think he's a great politician. And if he sits back and learns a little bit, you know, from the progressives out there, he could probably be a decent candidate going forward. He's too young now. But I think there's a lot of good stuff about him. But again, the way the attack dogs came out, and these are people ostensibly on the left. These are so-called Democrats eating their own because they don't like Bernie Sanders or they don't like Elizabeth Warren. It's like, I could vote for a woman, but not her. Well, fuck you. And I find myself getting upset over this stuff. And it's, God, we haven't even begun yet. Bernie Sanders hasn't even declared his candidacy yet. And already the hardline conservadems are coming out against the progressives, and it really sucks. And I will continue to say, number one, Bernie Sanders is the most popular politician in this country. Number two, he changed the narrative in this country because when he started running 4 years ago, no one was talking about Medicare for all or tuition-free college, state college and university, or many of the other social safety net things, ideas that Bernie Sanders has put out there and that have now become common for the Democratic Party, that it's part of the platform. They're all touting Medicare for all the way up to Nancy Pelosi. So I found myself getting upset about these attacks on Bernie, but just seeing that this is where we're headed again. And I watched Chris Hayes the other night. I think Chris Hayes does the best show on MSNBC. I really, really like him. Every now and then he says something I disagree with, but nobody's going to be perfect. I even disagree with myself every once in a while. Anyway, I want to play for you something that Chris Hayes said. It's sort of his resolution, and hopefully it'll be my resolution, too. Here's what Chris Hayes said.
You've probably heard by now that Senator Elizabeth Warren has made it official she will be running for president in 2020. You've also likely heard a lot of the by now standard punditizing about what it all means, with various hot takes about whether she can avoid being pinned as unlikable, or whether her drinking a beer in her kitchen was sufficiently authentic, or whether because she didn't run in 2016, she's missed her moment. Now, as someone in the business of covering and analyzing American politics, I am genuinely sympathetic to the ways in which the insatiable demands for content means a fair amount of shallow, quick takes on optics and electability, what have you. But I want to offer some advice to you, the viewer and voter, and really out loud to myself as a kind of New Year's resolution as we enter the presidential campaign. Ignore that nonsense. Seriously. 2016 represented the reductio ad absurdum of a political media industrial complex addicted to the spectacle and personal drama. And it is our job, all of our job, to do better this time around.
No shit.
So, while there will be plenty of reasons to legitimately scrutinize the political successes and failures of various candidates, their messages, strategies, approaches, inconsistencies, what should count most for us doing the covering and for you out there making the decisions about who to support and vote for ultimately is what the candidate's worldview is, what their platform calls for concretely, how they've conducted themselves in the past as a window into how they might be in the future, and what we can best find out about their mettle and their judgment. Who will they fight for? What will they fight for? Can they be trusted to do what they say?
Wow.
Everything else is noise.
Yep.
And trust me, there will be an awful lot of noise in the next 22 months.
No shit.
We're committed to try to turn down the din and listen and ask and get questions and answers about what matters.
It said so perfectly and so beautifully. The challenge is going to be following his advice. Tune out the noise. It's noise. I'll call them out on it, but I'm going to try not to get upset by it. Oh, here we go. All right. Somebody is calling. Hi, who's this?
This is Jason.
Oh, Jason.
From Simi Valley.
Okay. What's up, Jason?
I'm going to do something that I'm sorry, but it may upset you a little bit.
Okay, you did this yesterday, and this doesn't add to the show at all.
Well, no. You've just made a factual statement that was not correct.
What was that?
Bernie's not a Democrat. He's an independent.
I didn't say he was a Democrat.
Yeah, I swear to God, I'm not trying to. You did.
Okay, if I did, I made a mistake. He's an independent, and I don't give a fuck. Oops. Shit. Okay. Thanks for calling, Jason. Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He's an independent. And who fucking cares? Okay. Don't call anymore, Jason. I know you mean well, but don't. And you set it up, I'm going to upset you. Fuck you. You're not upsetting me. If I called, if I said Bernie Sanders was a Democrat, which I don't think I did, but occasionally I have a brain fart and say things that I don't mean to say. Bernie Sanders is an independent. And to all the people who go, but he's not a Democrat, I don't give a fuck. He's more Democratic than most of these other people, and it doesn't matter. Okay? Okay. There's some news to get to. I can play the recorded version, or I can attempt to do it live. What the fuck? We'll do it live. Let's go.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Nancy Pelosi is a woman of faith, a loving wife, a mother of five, a grandmother of nine, a sophisticated strategist, a legendary legislator, a voice for the voiceless, a defender of the disenfranchised, a powerful, profound, prophetic, principled public servant, and that's why we stand squarely behind her today. Let me be clear, House Democrats are down with NDP. Nancy D'Alessandro Pelosi, the once and future Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, I proudly place her name in nomination. May God bless her. May God bless the United States.
You know, he practiced that one a lot. That's Hakeem Jeffries of New York, the new Democratic caucus chair, yesterday officially nominating Nancy Pelosi as the next Speaker of the House. After the vote, which saw Pelosi getting 220 votes, Nancy retook the gavel.
The Honorable Nancy Pelosi of the state of California, having received a majority of the votes cast, is duly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives for the 116th Congress.
Oh, yes. And then they got down to business. The first order was the Democratic rules package containing that controversial pay-go provision. The rules were approved by a largely party-line vote, 234 to 197. Three Republican representatives voted for the package, going against the rest of their party. Congressmen Tom Reed and John Katko of New York and Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, they voted for it. Three Democrats, Ro Khanna and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who we knew were going to vote against it, did, and they were joined by Tulsi Gabbard. Tim Ryan of Ohio, who said he was going to vote against it but didn't, just wanted the publicity. He's a fraud. Anyway, they weren't done with their first day of the 116th Congress yet. Late Thursday, this happened.
Just in the last few moments, the votes have officially closed. So now we can say that as the first two official acts of business in the new Democratic-led House of Representatives, the House has passed two bills to reopen the federal government without funding for a wall on the southern border. Your move, Republican Senate.
Yeah. And I guess the move came from Trump, who today had Pelosi and Schumer out at. Okay, that's not supposed to happen. All right, let's. Hi, who's calling?
Pete.
Hi, Pete. From where?
Los Angeles.
Okay, what's on your mind? Yeah. What's on your mind, Pete?
Well, I just want to support Nicole. You know, and do it directly to her.
That's me. That's me. I work alone. I don't have a screen or anything. You're on the air.
Oh, I didn't realize I'm talking to you because I'm seeing the time delay on TV.
Yeah, well, it's internet, so it'll come up in about 10 seconds or so.
Okay, well, whether it's on the air or not, it doesn't matter. I just do want to support you. This is Pete Perlman, by the way. You know, we're Facebook friends.
Okay.
And,
hi,
you know,
Pete.
I've called you before, and I am Pete. Anyway, On the rant you did about basically no censorship, you know, with the George Carlin bit.
Yep.
Who, by the way, I met him once. That's another story. But and I worked at WBAI where he
nice.
Did that.
Yep.
Bit,
he did.
You know,
yep.
and they, you know, went to the Supreme Court. I'm sure you know all that,
mm-hmm.
being in radio and stuff.
I do.
But I've always felt that same way about that kind of stuff. Priorities, you know. I mean, Republicans get all twisted in knots about the stupidest things, and the real priorities they have backwards and misaligned, you know, sequentially. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, because I coined this phrase a few years ago called opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
We're living in that. I watched the Twilight Zone marathon over New Year's on the Sci-Fi Channel, and this is all I can think of. We are living in a Twilight Zone episode because nothing makes sense.
Yeah, I know. I've heard you do that bit before, and it's completely apt. So you could do it 1,000 times
yep.
during these days, and it'll fit, you know, and it's not even redundant, unfortunately. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
I get my support, and I hate, you know, people who don't get it. Yeah.
Well, you know, and we're going to run into more and more of them as we get closer and closer to November 2020. It's already starting, so just be prepared.
Okay. Well, right. Keep on doing what you're doing.
You got
I love
it.
You.
Thank you so much. Okay. I appreciate the call. All right. So weird. Skype is doing weird things. It's not supposed to make noise. I got to change the settings again, if I can. All right. What other stories? Let's see. All right. So the House, the Democrats voted to reopen the government. Pelosi had a few words to say to the press once the entire the festivities of the day were open.
The fact is, a wall is an immorality. It's not who we are as a nation. And this is not a wall between Mexico and the United States that the president is creating here. It's a wall between reality and his constituents, his supporters. He does not want them to know what he's doing to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security in his budget proposal. He does not want them to know what he's doing to clean air and clean water and the rest in his Department of Interior and of EPA. He does not want them to know how he is hurting them, so he keeps the subject on the wall. He's a master of diversion. We're trying to open up government. We're giving him a mature path to do so.
Okay, so that's Nancy Pelosi. No matter what Trump said at his bullshit Rose Garden thing today, they're no closer on settling this. The Democrats are not going to give on a wall. And, you know, as long as Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter, you know, hold Trump's fate in their hands, I guess he's not going to do anything either. Because he was ready to negotiate and to compromise until they badmouthed him. Let's see, what else? Regarding those the bills that Nancy Pelosi got passed in the House yesterday, Mitch McConnell has said he won't bring them to the Senate floor, but some in his caucus are starting to break ranks. Cory Gardner of Colorado and Susan Collins of Maine, who are both up for re-election in 2020, have said that they're calling for an end to the shutdown, even if Trump doesn't get his wall funding. Some comments made by Shelley Moore Capito, or Capito, I think, of West Virginia suggest that she might be on board, too. I guess we'll see. He said Mike, you know, Pence, is going to be at the White House negotiating over the weekend. Sure. What else? There's something that I have here that I didn't get to play yesterday that I need to share with you. It was an asinine comment that Trump made. Do I have time for this? Yeah, this is his little mini press conference after the cabinet meeting the other day, where he went on a 95-minute stream of consciousness ramble of nonsense. And he said this about Soviet Union invading Afghanistan.
Russia used to be the Soviet Union. Afghanistan made it Russia because they went bankrupt fighting in Afghanistan, Russia. So you take a look at other countries. Pakistan is there. They should be fighting. But Russia should be fighting. The reason Russia was in Afghanistan was because terrorists were going into Russia.
No.
They were right to be there.
No,
the
that's not
is
it at all. What?
And literally, they went bankrupt. They went
literally
into being called Russia again, as opposed to the Soviet Union. You know, a lot of these places you're reading about now are no longer part of Russia because of Afghanistan.
Oh God. Okay. That's not true. Not a word of it is true. In fact, it was so false that the Wall Street Journal published an op-ed today. And here's a quote from it. This is the Wall Street Journal. This is Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal. Quote, "We cannot recall a more absurd misstatement of history by an American president. The Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan with three divisions in December 1979 to prop up a fellow communist government. The invasion was condemned throughout the non-communist world. The Soviets justified the invasion as an extension of the Brezhnev Doctrine, asserting their right to prevent countries from leaving the communist sphere. This mockery," writes the Wall Street Journal, "is a slander against every ally that has supported the U.S. effort in Afghanistan with troops who fought and often died." The Wall Street Journal calling out Trump. All right, that's enough for the news. Let's call John Nichols, shall we? Hopefully my phone will work. Every year, The Nation publishes their progressive honor roll for the year just gone by. And this is no exception. In the current December issue of The Nation magazine is the 2018 Progressive Honor Roll, as always, curated by our friend John Nichols. John, are you with us?
I sure am.
We've been doing this. I know you do this every year, but it seems like the last 10 years or so, I've always been honored to have you on whatever show I'm doing to talk about who did the best, who were the best progressives, the Progressive Honor Roll for the year gone by. And I see some familiar names on this list and some new ones as well. In fact, I guess we should just start off with the very first one because some of them have made a splash since the day they were elected and continued to splash things yesterday as they were sworn in. You wrote, the most valuable progressives are Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Ayanna Pressley. Pretty good choices there.
Yeah, and they've really made themselves central to the process, which is how politics ought to be. I mean, a healthy politics is open to new people, that it has roads up and avenues in. And what we've seen in 2018, particularly at the congressional level, is a lot of, for lack of a better term, entrepreneurial politics. Folks who maybe 2 years ago weren't even thinking about running for Congress.
Right.
2 years ago, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she often notes, was working as a bartender, or less than 2 years ago. And, you know, Ilhan Omar, just 2 years ago, she was elected to the state legislature up in Minnesota.
Wow.
You know, relative newcomer. Rashida Tlaib has been around longer. Same with Ayanna Pressley. They both have been engaged politically for longer periods of time. But in each of their cases, they didn't have easy ways in, or, you know, they'd have the road paved for them. Ayanna Pressley, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, had to defeat a Democratic incumbent in a primary. And Rashida Tlaib, like Ilhan Omar, both, by the way, the first Muslim women in Congress, they each had to win crowded primaries against very well-established and popular opponents. And so these are remarkable women. They tend to be pretty young, but they know who they are, and they're not coming in simply to, you know, kind of fit in. They're coming in to lead.
Yeah.
And so that's why we celebrated them, because that's, frankly, the Democratic Party needs leadership. It needs young, bold, smart folks coming up and pushing for things.
And it needs to show that the elders of the party, and I'm not making a comment on their age, I'm talking about the establishment people who've been there for years, accept these freshmen and value the cultural things that they bring with them, and the energy and the excitement, frankly, because that's what this party sorely needs. Now, a couple of them, Rashida Tlaib, has gotten a lot of notice in the press today for a remark she made last night at a celebration. It was a move-on celebration after the day's festivities. And frankly, I found nothing wrong with what she said. Here's the remark.
People love you. And you win. Woo. And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won. Bullies don't win. And I said, baby, they don't. Because we're going to go in there. We're going to impeach the motherfucker.
Okay, so the crowd went wild. The Republicans' heads exploded today. And all I can think is, have they met their president? I mean, this guy is more vile.
Donald Trump doesn't always use the most polite language.
You think?
You know, but this is the thing about it. I grew up in small town Wisconsin, in a very rural setting where we're all probably a little more proper than we're supposed to be. And so I might not have said it that way. But Rashida Tlaib's coming out of Detroit.
That's right.
And she's coming out of a town where, you know, a lot of politics got pretty big elbows. You gotta make yourself heard. And my point on this is to say that if we want a Congress that is representative of America, we're going to have people that are going to use all kinds of language, and they're going to speak in all kinds of ways. And instead of this faux outrage, right, where you say, "Oh, I can't believe she said that. We, you know, we can't respect her, or we can't listen to her." Come on, spare me.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, she revealed there her passion, her sense of humor, frankly, her good, her you know, kind of good energy on a lot of these issues. Now, I understand that there may be a couple folks who'd say it differently, right?
Yep.
Fine. That's cool.
Yeah.
You say it how you want.
And that's what Nancy Pelosi said, too. I would have said it differently, but I agree with what she's saying, and I love her energy. I mean, at least that's what she got. Now, you, John Nichols, wrote a piece that was posted up at The Nation yesterday, and it was before she made the statement, but the headline is, Rashida Tlaib calls for taking immediate steps toward impeachment on her first day in Congress. That really should be the story, the headline, not that she said, motherfucker. I'm sorry.
Well,
it's a word that gets used around here a lot.
She wants it.
Yep.
And the key is that what she is saying is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I think Rashida Tlaib is going to get a lot of notice in Congress. She's going to shake things up in a whole bunch of ways. And she may be of this new group coming in, the one that shakes things up the most, although I'm certainly not going to say that for sure. But what I will tell you is that she's doing it with energy and passion. And I think that she's doing it out of a anger that reflects what she heard as a candidate, what she heard in a tough race coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the interesting thing. A lot of people have lost the context of some of her statements here. They're taking one word.
Yeah.
What they're not recognizing is she is saying she is passionate on this. She is intense on this because this president is hurting people in her district.
Right.
People on the ground in her turf back in Michigan who are suffering because of this president's actions. And when she campaigned, I covered her campaign. She talked about impeachment during the campaign.
No, she has been for a while. And it took her
they
cursing.
They elected her to go do this.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Also today, another one that the Republicans are taking aim at is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They think they got something on her because they found a video of her dancing on a rooftop while she was in college. And it's a wonderful video. It shows a joyous young woman having fun and embracing life. And they thought, they were going to, that it was a burn on her or something. People have embraced it. The video has gone viral. There's a new Twitter account with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dancing to every song on the planet. They mixed it. And somebody else made the dance into a commercial for Medicare for All. I mean, this thing took on a life of its own. And I think it's wonderful.
Well, and I think, you know, it was clearly an intentional hit. There were folks out there who thought they had come on to something. They thought they had discovered something that would destroy her politically, right? You know, while she danced.
Yep.
And instead, now partially this is because of the great energy that AOC brings to politics.
Yep.
She's somebody, you know, when folks take a shot at her, when they attack her for something, she very often turns it right back on.
Yeah.
And I think the people who are enthusiastic about her service, have embraced that sensibility. Instead of, you know, being offended, they're like, oh yeah, this is exactly right. And the thing that I say is, what did that video tell us? It told us she could dance.
Yes.
That she could reference iconic films.
Mm-hmm.
That she had friends, and that she was fun and cool.
Yep.
And
all those things.
It confirmed she wasn't a conservative.
Yeah, that's true.
but it you know, look, I'm joking. You know, there's probably some cool conservatives out there, I imagine. But at the heart of it, it showed us the kind of person who we would hope our Congress would include.
Absolutely.
Right? If
it's absolutely.
If we have a Congress that's going to be even minimally representative of a great mass of Americans, then, yeah, we ought to have some folks who've danced on rooftops in
yes,
our Congress.
Most definitely. So those four, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Ayanna Pressley, were named the most valuable progressives in the nation's 2018 Progressive Honor Roll. I would think, you know, they came in at the very end. In November, we learned of them. Maybe in 2019, they can really earn those stripes. You move on, John Nichols, to somebody who has the most valuable senator, and your pick for this year has had this title before, Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to agree with you, because this is the year we really saw so many other Democrats pick up the mantle that he brought to the campaign in 2016. Medicare for All wasn't widely discussed except for Bernie. Tuition-free mm-hmm. public colleges and university. Again, we didn't hear any Democrats, I know Bernie's not officially a Democrat, but he ran as a Democrat, and he caucuses with the Democrats. We haven't seen anybody else, champion these ideas until now. And I would say if it wasn't for Bernie, right. they wouldn't be championing them yet either.
Well, and I think that there are people who really want to talk Bernie Sanders down.
Yes, they do.
Right?
Yep.
That don't like him for whatever reason, disagree with him. And that's, that's part of politics. You have to accept that as a reality.
Yeah, but the attacks are coming fast this time.
They are, and partially it's because the presidential race is about to begin and,
yep.
and everybody's positioning. But what I did this year in looking at it, and what I always do this list in consultation with nation editors and progressives around. What I did was I stepped back and I said, okay, who in 2018, if you take a serious look at it, in a point where Democrats were in opposition, where they were fighting against, a Republican majority in the Senate and Republicans with full control of the executive and legislative branches, who did the most with the hand that person had been dealt with? And if you take a look at Bernie Sanders, what he did on putting the issues you just mentioned on the table, as well as a whole host of other issues
mm-hmm.
On, everything from labor rights to consumer protection, kind of a constant set of bills, always in collaboration with members of the House, often younger members of the House. And then you say, okay, well, what did he accomplish out of that? Well, he took on Amazon
mm-hmm.
and helped to leverage in working closely with unions and with activists, helped to leverage real increases in pay. Amazon agreed voluntarily to increase pay for a whole lot of workers,
right.
hundreds of thousands of workers. And then he took on this issue of Yemen, such a neglected issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, we finished the year with the Senate voting for a new policy as regards Yemen. We still haven't got it because we've got a struggle in the House. We've struggled with Trump. But, boy, to get the Republican-controlled Senate to vote in favor of, saying we don't want to align with the Saudis
mm-hmm.
as they do such terrible damage in Yemen.
Right.
These are real things. And so you have to, I just think you have to give Bernie Sanders credit.
I agree.
The real accomplishments of the year, as well as the use of the bully pulpit.
Yeah, and moving the general outlook. I mean, again, when he came on the scene, in 2015, and at least floated the idea of running for president, was talking about Medicare for All. He was the only one, and now it's like in the Democratic Party platform. I mean, everybody, from the incoming freshmen mm-hmm. on the way up, are all talking about Medicare for All. This is huge, and I give the credit directly to Bernie Sanders.
You have to give him a lot. And, the good thing about Bernie Sanders is, because he's a movement guy, he'd be the first to tell you that you're wrong and I'm wrong.
Yeah.
That there's
right.
plenty of people that were working on
yep,
this 50
that's
years
true.
Ago.
Yeah.
But that's why it works.
Yep.
And again, Bernie Sanders is now in a position of tremendous prominence in the U.S. and frankly, internationally.
Yeah.
What was clear in 2018 was to use that prominence to continue to move issues to the forefront.
Yes. You're right. I'm really impressed with your pick for the most valuable House member. It's somebody who just finished his freshman term. He's now coming into his second term. And I got to admit, during the primary, I was a little upset because Ro Khanna was challenging Mike Honda, who was a long-term great progressive. He wasn't a very visible member. He wasn't always out there in front of the cameras. But he's the guy who was always responsible for writing the progressive caucus budget, the people's budget, which never got enough attention, I thought, and was always made a lot of sense. But Ro Khanna has really proved himself to be a valuable member of the House and, you know, I guess a suitable replacement for Mike Honda.
Yeah, I mean, and this is always a hard thing. And, you know, we know we were just talking a moment ago about AOC and about...
Well, Joe Crowley needed to go with AOC.
What?
Joe Crowley needed to go. The fact that a young upstart progressive beat this entrenched, what I call conservadem, who was in line to be the next Speaker of the House, I think it was a wonderful victory for progressives. In terms of this seat from the San Jose area, both Mike Honda and Ro Khanna are progressives. I just
didn't know how good Ro was going to be. But members come up, you know, you get into Congress in different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in some districts, you're going to beat an incumbent.
Yep.
In a primary.
Yep.
And the measure is always what you do once you've done that.
Right.
And Ro Khanna came into Congress as somebody who, you know, quite a few people were a little standoffish. They're like, okay, we don't know what to expect from this guy. He kind of really came in his own way.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about him is he immediately began forming coalitions, reaching out to elders on the, frankly, the progressive side of issues, people like Barbara Lee and others have been there in Congress for a long time and saying, hey, I want to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you've been virtually alone on some of these issues. I'm going to stand right at your side. Let's raise it up on an issue like Yemen or the authorization of use of military force, kind of to finally force Congress to declare wars rather than to just let presidents do as they choose, but also on a host of other issues. He was Bernie Sanders' House ally in taking on Amazon. He has been incredibly out front on digital issues, on tech issues, partially because he represents the Silicon Valley. He knows the territory, partially because he did serve in the Obama administration advising on those issues. But also because he's got an understanding of it, a baseline core understanding of where democracy and the technology revolution are going to be intersecting. And he, you know, I just don't think there's any way to suggest that he hasn't hit the ground running as not just a very successful, very influential freshman member of the House, but frankly, if he was a senior member of the House, you'd say, wow, that was a heck of a year.
Yes.
You know, and you got Yemen on the agenda. You're taking on Amazon, biggest, you know, one of the biggest companies in the world. You're working, building alliances, not just with Democrats, but also sometimes with the Republicans to move issues along.
And he stood up yesterday. He and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and surprisingly, Tulsi Gabbard were the only three who voted against the rules package, which was the first thing they brought up in the House. And the reason they voted against it was this PAYGO provision that we've been talking about on the show here all week that really it goes against all progressive ideals, and they stood up against it. Now, the new chairs, the co-chairs of the Progressive Caucus, Pramila Jayapal and Mark Pocan, they came out and said they were going to vote for it because of the way the rule is written, and it was a technical thing that, frankly, I can't explain well. I sort of understood it, although people who I respect have poo-pooed that and said, no, this was a bad vote. This was a bad rule to include in the rules package, that PAYGO shouldn't have gone. And again, Ro Khanna and AOC make a stand at the first day. And a lot of others, of course, are taking the ire of the true progressives out there, saying, how could they vote against this? This just shows that I guess people aren't going to march in such lockstep, that we've got a lot of independently minded people in this Democratic caucus in the House. There's going to be a lot of action going on this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love what they did there. They took an issue and put it in the forefront, an economic issue, an economics or at least a budgetary issue that most people aren't aware of, that the average person may not know about. And they pushed it out to the forefront. They said, you know, let's talk about this. Now, there were some progressives, good progressives, solid progressives who said, you know, look, we see other ways to get at this. And in fact, I think we'll propose legislation to, or at least rules changes ultimately to get rid of the PAYGO stuff. You can have, if you want, a great big debate about how and when to time these things, or you can step back and say, you know, we didn't ever have this debate before.
Right.
So what just happened is a really good thing.
Yeah. And now people are talking about PAYGO, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And at the core of it is we're getting ourselves back to some fundamentals of how to do budgeting, how to govern. And one of the fundamentals is that if you're going to do a Green New Deal, which is an issue a lot of these new members have fought to put on the agenda, if you're going to do something really big, it may in fact be the case that you've got to find money to do it, right?
It
may not just happen. And so how are you going to do that? Well, cut defense spending, move money over from the Pentagon to domestic needs. That's a great idea. It's been proposed many times.
Right.
Tax the rich.
Right.
Great idea. It's been proposed many times.
Right.
But there may actually be some places where you do borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And because you spend some money to ultimately kickstart things like a Green New Deal that's going to be in the long term very, very good for the economy, very, very good for the country, just as the first New Deal was back in the 1930s. And bottom line on all this is that if indeed that's the case, that we need to do great big things in the 21st century, we better find the money for it.
Yeah,
we better
although,
figure out how we're going to pay for it.
Although, if you listen to Stephanie Kelton and people who are proponents of modern monetary theory, you don't have to. Deficits are okay. It's a sign of a healthy country.
Right.
And so it's a narrative that many disagree with, that you don't have to find the money. The money is there.
That's right. Well, the bottom line is, however you're going to go at it, my point is not to criticize one approach or the other. It's just to simply say, now we're actually talking about
That's
it.
That's right. And people
now we're talking about how we're going to do these things. And once you get there, then big stuff becomes possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I love what Khanna and AOC did because even if you don't line up with them, even if you don't agree with every aspect of it, they forced us into a discussion that, frankly, we need to have.
Yes, most definitely. And the fact that people who probably have never heard of PAYGO are talking about it, took sides on it, that's a good thing. Again, the more informed the electorate is, the better for all of us. The problem comes when we have people who don't know what they're talking about, who like the president, who weighs in on the
things
he knows
everything.
Right, I was
going to say, who usually make the president.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. you have a new, I don't remember this category before, most valuable policy intervention, and you named the Congressional Progressive Caucus Center. Is this something new?
Yeah, it really is new. And because, you know, it's one of the things that we look at a lot is how you move the needle, right? How you make something happen. We were just talking about it as regards Green New Deal and stuff like that. Well, back in the 1960s and into the early 70s, when Democrats in Congress were really, you know, kind of on the march and they were doing Medicare and Medicaid and war on poverty and, you know, really advancing a whole bunch of environmental issues, advancing women's rights at fundamental level, there was a thing called the Democratic Study Group, DSG. And the Democratic Study Group was really influential. It was a sort of inside-outside operation that pulled together big thinkers, policymakers, activists, and, you know, drew up legislation, helped to educate members of Congress about why legislation was necessary, also helped to build, you know, structural support for big changes. When Newt Gingrich came to power in the 1990s, DSG was already a weaker institution than it had been, but Gingrich got rid of this kind of stuff, and for a reason, because he still saw it as very powerful, very influential, and frankly, potentially very progressive. What Pocan and Jayapal are doing is developing a 21st century version, in fact, in many ways, structurally better version of what the DSG was. And so they are essentially saying they want to create the framework, the infrastructure, to move progressive legislation, to build progressive movements inside and outside that can really jumpstart things in a way that, frankly, Congress hasn't done in quite a long time. Progressives even haven't done in a long time. They've got funding for it. They're hiring staff. They are, you know, linking with progressive groups out in the country. This is a very, very big deal. And it will become a center for a lot of activism on issues that are going to matter a great deal. It's not been talked about much, so This is one of the reasons why we highlighted it.
Yeah, this was the first I had heard of it.
And you ought to get them. You should get Pocan or Jayapal on.
I would love to.
They'll blow your mind with you know how ambitious they are with these ideas.
Awesome. Well, this is exciting because this is what we need. And it's a time when I think the country is going in a more progressive direction. And I think anyone who pushes back on that notion is not paying attention. I mean, just what we were talking about before, John, with the widespread acceptance of the idea of Medicare for all or tuition-free college, or other ideas that have come through Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. Again, it's hard to realize that that's the case, knowing what's going on, you know, in the White House and in the Senate. I think the people are more progressive than they were. I think we're just moving in a more progressive direction. I want to spot there's a whole bunch of categories. Obviously, we're not going to have time to get through all of them, but it's at thenation.com. It's the 2018 Progressive Honor Roll. It's in the December issue of The Nation magazine. It's the cover story on there. And there's a lot of great stuff you learn about from here. Of course, I live in Florida, and so I'm thrilled you included as the most valuable advance for voting rights is the Florida Voting Restoration Amendment. Unfortunately, Florida elected this guy Ron DeSantis as governor, he's trying to stop this.
Well, they're doing the same thing in Michigan and in Wisconsin, other places where in Michigan and Wisconsin, where they elected relatively progressive Democratic governors and Democratic attorneys general, they're trying to disempower them. You know, as you say, DeSantis trying to overturn the will of the people. We're seeing similar things in Ohio and other places around the country. This is a really ugly turn in our politics. But let us at core recognize the incredible significance of what happened in Florida this year. Grassroots activists identified a barrier to millions of people, or more than a million people in Florida, millions across the country, casting ballots, literally participating in our political process. They went to the people of the state via, you know, an initiative, you know, going out, gathering the signatures, getting an amendment on the ballot. And against the assumptions, not just of Republicans, but frankly, the assumptions of a lot of Democrats, they won a landslide victory, right?
Yep.
And what this taught us is that the people of this country, not just Florida, but across this country, are ready to support criminal justice reform and democracy reforms that are much bolder than our political elites accept. Now, will there be some members of the political class who still try to push back, undermine, weaken it? Of course there will. But the bottom line is, after what Florida did, never again can any serious progressive in any state across this country try and suggest that you can't really go for it on, again, criminal justice reform and democracy reform. There's a lot more space there, and Florida did that. Florida showed us what is possible, won a huge landslide victory for expansion of voting rights.
Yes.
It's a very exciting thing.
It is
and
very
it
exciting.
Deserves huge celebration.
Right. And it's amazing to me that it's Amendment 4 went through. And Andrew Gillum, who was a great candidate for governor, real progressive, just lost by this much. And I guess that's the Trump factor, because he came in and he...
Next time it's better.
it's got to be better. And hopefully we're moving in the right direction. John Nichols of The Nation, it is always a pleasure. I couldn't see starting off another new year without talking to you about the best progressives of 2018. Because as negative as I've been lately, it's important to honor the people who are doing good work and thank them for that. And that's something we need to remember. There are a lot of people out there working really hard and trying to change things for the better. And we need to show our appreciation and get behind them as well.
We value you so much, Nicole. Thanks for your great work.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And Happy New Year.
You too.
All right. Take care. John Nichols, everybody. Find him on Twitter at Nichols Uprising. And, of course, you can find The Nation at thenation.com. All right. That's it for today. It's the weekend. Enjoy it. I started volunteering at the Sawgrass Nature Center, so I'll be taking care of animals on Sunday. And I'll be back here on Tuesday with Gotta Laugh. See you then. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.